Also, we have to understand that in this war there is one aggressor and one victim, so we haven't heard of any concessions on the Russian side. I mean, if Russia really wanted peace, it could have, agreed to unconditional ceasefire already some time ago, whereas we see...
Could you just clarify for us, have European officials in any way been a part of the drafting of the peace plan you just mentioned between the US and Russia?
Not that I know of.
This is my video update on this Thursday afternoon, November the 20th, coming to you from Athens, Greece. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with the big news story for today, which is the latest and greatest Trump-Ukraine peace plan, which is a return to what was agreed on in Alaska. At least if you go off of what the West mainstream media is reporting, the renewed talks between Witkoff and Dmitriev is an effort by the Trump White House to revive what was agreed on in Alaska between Trump and Putin, and an agreement in Alaska that Trump walked back on. Yeah, the agreement in Alaska was something that Trump walked back, and Lavrov has gone over this many times in many interviews. He's discussed in pretty good detail what led up to the meeting in Alaska between Putin and Trump, what was effectively agreed on, and how Trump decided then to walk back on the agreement he made with Putin upon consultation from various advisors. This is according to Lavrov. Most likely, my guess would be that those White House advisors were Kellogg, Lindsey Graham, Besant, and probably Rubio as well, who most likely told Trump that the situation in Pokrovsk, the military situation on the front lines, it's all under control. You have a stalemate, Mr. President, and I imagine Besant told Trump that the economic situation in Russia is catastrophic, and just a couple of more big sanctions from the U.S. and the Russian economy will collapse, and you will have leverage on Putin, and you will then be able to dictate terms. So Trump took their advice. After Alaska, he walked back everything that he agreed on with Putin. He decided to go down the path of sanctions. You had the Lukoil Rosneft sanctions. He also went down the path of military escalation, and he started to talk about Tomahawk missiles and long-range missile strikes. And we're not giving weapons to Ukraine. We're selling them to NATO, and then NATO is giving them to Ukraine. And he went down this path of escalation. And fast forward to today, and it is impossible to ignore the fact that Russia is winning big in the conflict. They are advancing and capturing many areas, many cities along the entire front lines of Ukraine: Kupiansk, Pokrovsk, Mirnograd, Zaporozhye. I've talked about Zaporozhye as well. You also have news that Russia is now in the city center of Seversk. I'll get to that later on in the video update. And Ukraine, the Ukraine military, is depleted, is defeated. NATO and the United States is being defeated in Ukraine. And so this is what has pushed Trump to try and revive the terms that were agreed on in Anchorage via Witkoff, who is speaking with Dmitriev. They both get along, Witkoff and Dmitriev. So they are the ones that are talking. The Russian media is pretty quiet about the details as to what is being discussed between Witkoff and Dmitriev, the collective West media, they are leaking all kinds of information and details, bullet points as to what the two gentlemen are discussing and what they have agreed on. I talked about this yesterday with regards to Axios's reporting, which revealed that that this latest plan is being worked on by Witkoff and Dmitriev. The Financial Times then confirmed Axios is reporting, and NBC took it one step further, and they actually reported that Trump has green lit the discussions, the points that Witkoff and Dmitriev are discussing and allegedly putting together in some sort of a renewed plan to present not only to Russia, but to try and push Zelensky to agree to. The European Union, they have been frozen out of these discussions. This has upset stunning and brave Kaya Kallas, who told the media that there can be no agreements or negotiations with regards to the conflict in Ukraine unless Ukraine is brought to the table, invited to the table, and the EU also needs to be brought into the loop. There can be no discussions unless Ukraine and the EU are involved, according to Kaya Kallas. Why would the United States invite their vassals to sit down and discuss any negotiations that are going to be taking place with Russia in what effectively is a proxy war between the United States and Russia? Why would you invite the vassals to the dinner table? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Kaya Kallas also told the media that the Trump White House must not forget that in this conflict, there is one aggressor, and that is Russia, and there is one victim, and that is Ukraine. Ukraine has also been kept out of the loop, at least up until yesterday, when Zelensky traveled to Turkey, where he is allegedly being briefed on what Witkoff and Dmitriev are discussing, what Trump has signed off on. And the reports are that, and this is coming from Reuters, that U.S. military officials and other U.S. officials are in Turkey to try and push Zelensky to agree to this renewed Alaska deal, or this Alaska framework, whatever you want to call it. NBC News reported President Trump approves plan for peace between Russia and Ukraine. Senior administration officials say, according to the Telegraph, get this, according to the UK Telegraph, one of the points of discussion between Witkoff and Dmitriev is that Russia will control the Donbas, but the proposal from the United States is that Russia would be leasing the Donbas from Ukraine. They would be paying rent to Ukraine for the Donbas. The media is also reporting that Crimea would be recognized by the United States, I believe, but Ukraine would not be forced to recognize Crimea as part of the Russian Federation. So that was also thrown in there as well. The Russian Foreign Ministry is saying that they have received no plan from the United States, at least not from official channels. And it's important to mention that Maria Zakharova, as she was asked about this Trump plan, this new Trump plan, she made it clear that the Russian Foreign Ministry has not received any plan from official sources, from official channels. Russia has not received any information from the U.S. through official channels regarding some agreements on Ukraine that the media is speculating about. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said in an interview with TASS. This is a 28-point plan. It's not a 20-point plan. It's a 28-point plan. I believe I mentioned this yesterday in my video update. This is according to Axios is reporting. And we are getting reports today that Kushner and Rubio and Vice President Vance will be joining Witkoff as they try to move forward in this negotiation process. Kushner, Vance, and Rubio are now joining in, according to, I believe, NBC News reported on this. And then you have the reports from Reuters. I believe they broke this story, that Kellogg allegedly is resigning in January. Keith Kellogg is out, according to Reuters. That's big news. If that is proven to be true, then that would be, in my opinion, the strongest signal that perhaps the Trump White House is kind of serious about resolving the conflict in Ukraine, and not so much resolving the conflict in Ukraine. I would say it's more about Trump avoiding a loss and presenting some sort of win, resolving his ninth conflict. I would say it's more about that than actually getting to a long-term solution to what is Ukraine and what is a greater European security architecture, because at the end of the day, what Russia really wants is not only a long-term resolution to Ukraine, but they also want a long-term resolution to Europe's security architecture, which takes Russia's interests into consideration. So, I mean, that's where Russia is coming from. But I believe that Trump, President Trump, is just trying to figure out a way to turn an L into a W. The neocons, the U.S. deep states, I think we all know what they're trying to get out of this, what they're looking to do. They're looking to get a Minsk 3. They're looking for a freeze and a way to rearm Ukraine, a way to probably send NATO troops into Ukraine, at least the western parts of Ukraine, and to stop Russia's momentum, and then to perhaps restart, or definitely to restart the conflict, maybe a year or two or three down the line in the future. So that's where we are. Kellogg allegedly resigning would signal that the forces that do want to, at a minimum, engage with Russia, talk with Russia, Witkoff, Vance, these forces have won out over, let's say, the very hawkish Ukraine envoy Kellogg forces. At a minimum, you could assume that Trump told, I would assume that Trump told Kellogg, bro, the information that you gave me about the situation on the front line was just freaking wrong, man. Kellogg, you're out. You're out, E5000. Let me explore what Witkoff has been trying to do with Dmitriev. Let me flip-flop back to Alaska. That's what I think actually is going on. Let me flip-flop back to Alaska, because, man, I cannot be blamed for what would be a huge, massive defeat for the United States in Ukraine. So it is important that the reports are that Kellogg is gone. And it may point to something actually progressing with these talks. maybe something progressing with these talks. Try to be careful with my words here. But you know, it would be a really clear signal that something big is happening, that something substantive is happening this time around between the United States and Russia. It would be if U.S. military advisors after Kiev, because right now they're in Kiev, if they go to Moscow. And there are some rumors which claim that U.S. military advisors will be going to Moscow. Right now they're in Kiev, and the reports are they're trying to push the Ukraine military to agree to this framework. And if they show up in Moscow, then that would be a big signal that something is happening. Alexander mentioned this in his video update yesterday. That's what we need to look out for. U.S. military officials in Moscow. That's going to be a signal that something is progressing. Peskov commented on the Trump plan about a couple of hours ago, actually. And he said, we cannot add anything new to what was said in Anchorage. Putin has no plans to meet with the U.S. Army Secretary. Russia continues to remain open to a peaceful settlement, but the settlement must lead to the elimination of the root causes of this conflict. This is what we constantly talk about. Dmitriev is saying the same thing as he is discussing with Witkoff. According to Axios, he is also saying that whatever is being discussed absolutely has to take Russia's interests, root causes into consideration. So look for military advisors going to Moscow, or if they don't go to Moscow, then I think that's a clear signal that that there is going to be no deal going forward. By the way, there were reports that Witkoff was going to be in Turkey as the United States tries to push Zelensky to agree to this Alaska return to the Alaska terms. And the latest reports are that Witkoff canceled his trip to Turkey. He ended up not going to Turkey. And according to the Financial Times, when all of this was initially presented to Zelensky, he rejected it outright. But the West media is also spinning this as a Ukraine capitulation. They're saying that if the Green Goblin agreed to this framework, at least what we know of it, then it would mean that Ukraine would lose its sovereignty. They're actually using these words: Ukraine would lose its sovereignty. And they're saying that that Ukraine is making all the concessions under pressure from Witkoff, and that Russia is making no concessions, which is complete fiction, because the big concession that the media is saying that Ukraine is making, and this is where they're trying to get very, very clever and very deceptive, right? They're being very, very deceptive here, the media. They're saying that Ukraine is going to make a big concession by giving up Donetsk, all of Donetsk, because they still control 20% of Donetsk. And the plan says that Russia would take control of Donetsk, of course, under some sort of a rent or a lease. But still, they're saying that this is the big concession that Ukraine is making. And that's not a concession. This is deception, because, as I said earlier, everyone now understands that sooner or later, and probably sooner, Russia is going to capture all of Donetsk militarily. That's obvious. That is crystal clear. But the media is trying to spin it as if this is a big Ukraine concession, which it is not. What it is a reality as to what is happening on the front lines. Russia is going to capture all of Donetsk. That is happening. That is happening in the near future. And also, let's not forget about Russia's advance in Zaporozhye, and Russia is also active in Kherson as well. So let me Well, let me get to what Russia is saying before I, Russian media, what they're saying. And before I go there, let me read you a post from Rubio. I think this is interesting. I'm not sure what to make of this. Rubio posted this on X, but it is not from the official account of the Secretary of State. It's from Marco Rubio's X account, his official X account, but he did not post this from the Rubio at Secretary of State X account. Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but he posted this on Marco Rubio on his X account. Ending a complex and deadly war such as the one in Ukraine requires an extensive exchange of serious and realistic ideas, and achieving a durable peace will require both sides to agree to difficult but necessary concessions. That is why we are and will continue to develop a list of potential ideas for ending this war based on input from both sides of this conflict. That was what Rubio had to say about the news with Trump's renewed peace plan. Here is what Russian media is saying. And once again, Russian media is sourcing everything from U.S. media, and then they're translating it into Russian, and they're publishing it for their readers. But Russian media is saying that Trump's plan for Ukraine is in line with Putin's proposals, referencing Istanbul plus June 2024 root causes. And they're sourcing the Wall Street Journal on this one. And then they're sourcing Reuters on a report that the United States made it clear to Zelensky that Kiev must accept the peace plan. Ukrainian media write that Washington will persuade him to agree to a framework agreement with Russia. That's what RIA Novosti is saying. And then RIA Novosti, in another article, they highlight the key points of this framework that is being discussed between Dmitriev and Witkoff. The U.S. proposal includes state language status for Russia and recognition of the official status of the UOC in Ukraine, the Orthodox Church in Ukraine. Washington will reduce military assistance to Kiev. Ukraine abandons the entire Donbas. The number of the Ukraine armed forces is cut in half. The plan involves the transfer of Kiev-controlled Donbas territories to Russia in exchange for security guarantees from the United States. The part about Ukraine's military being cut in half, The Economist is reporting that they've seen parts of the proposal, part of the framework, which actually says Ukraine will cut its military more than half. 2.5 times will be the cut in its military forces. This is coming from The Economist, which is urging Zelensky not to agree to any proposal that is being made. And the part about security guarantees from the United States is interesting. I saw a video of Wesley Clark. You know, Wesley Clark, seven countries were going to overthrow the governments or invade seven countries in 7 years or in 10 years or whatever. That Wesley Clark, he said that the United States providing security guarantees could be very dangerous. The United States providing security guarantees to Ukraine. What if something happens, he said, and then that would force the United States, compel the United States to actually go into a hot war, not a proxy war, into a hot war with Russia, because it is on the hook with protecting Ukraine. I can't see Russia agreeing to something like this. But anyway, that is what is being reported. We continue. The contact lines in the Zaporozhye and Kherson regions will be frozen for the most part. The territories of Donbas that Kiev cedes will be considered a demilitarized zone. The deployment of foreign troops in Ukraine will be prohibited. Kiev will no longer receive Western weapons capable of hitting deep into Russia. Qatar and Turkey are participating in the development of the initiative. A demilitarized zone in Donbass. I'm not sure I buy that one either, but okay. And I think the real controversial, contentious one, the one that's going to be, if this is true and we get to a deal which is something similar to this, let's just say we get to some sort of framework that is similar to this. It's a big assumption, but okay. The part that's going to be very, very controversial, at least for Putin, is going to be freezing Zaporozhye and Kherson. That's going to be very, very controversial. So that is where we are. Of course, it says for the most part, for the time being, Lavrov actually said this in an interview, that when they were discussing Zaporozhye and Kherson in Alaska, the agreement was for a temporary freeze along the contact line, but eventually the United States, there was an understanding that the United States understood that Zaporozhye and Kherson were part of the Russian Federation, and that was going to be agreed on and recognized further down the line in negotiations. That is what Lavrov has said about what was agreed on in Alaska. And in order for that to be accepted by Ukraine, obviously, in order for all of this to be accepted by Ukraine, especially for Zaporozhye, Kherson, Donetsk, for the territory situation, Ukraine would have to have a new government in place, right? You would probably need a federalized Ukraine, and you would have to have a new government. Zelensky and his regime would absolutely have to go, and you would have to get a government that was more friendly and more receptive to Russia. And perhaps that's where you're getting the Energoatom 100 million energy scandal, right? Forcing Zelensky to number one, agree to this, and to number two, exit the scene. I wouldn't be surprised if Zelensky in Turkey is perhaps discussing his exit, his safety, maybe even his safety and his exit. Does he get to keep everything that he has if he exits the scene? Will he be protected? I wouldn't be surprised if U.S. officials are actually discussing this with him. There are reports which claim that yes, Zelensky went to Turkey to speak with the U.S. officials, but there's another reason that he was motivated to go to Turkey, and that is to sit down with Umerov. And so Zelensky travels to Turkey on the orders of the United States so that they can present this Trump peace framework to him. But he also travels to Turkey so that he can sit down face to face with Umerov and see if Umerov snitched on him. Because this energy scandal, the investigation, is starting to zero in on the Green Goblin. We are getting reports that Nabu is starting to look at Zelensky. And they're already going after Yermak. And if Zelensky has to fire Yermak, then that means that he is losing his muscle. He is going to be very exposed without Yermak. And Nabu is starting to talk about Zelensky and his dealings with Energoatom and corruption and all of these things. So Zelensky is probably definitely getting very, very nervous about the situation in Kiev. So you travel to Turkey. Umerov is also there, and you want to sit down with Umerov and get an understanding of what he said. If he ratted you out to the three-letter agencies, it makes sense. The golden toilet. The golden toilet
is going to bring down the Zelensky regime. Who would have called that one? The golden toilet, that's going to be Zelensky's undoing. The golden toilet is going to flush the Zelensky regime down the toilet. Oh my God. It's kind of a fitting end, isn't it? It is kind of a fitting end. The Ukraine energy minister has resigned, has been dismissed. The justice minister has been dismissed. Yermak is on the chopping block. By the way, Yermak, there are reports that Yermak was also in Turkey. So yeah, I could see Yermak, Zelensky, and Podolyak calling Umerov into the office, right? What you tell CIA Umerov? Anyway, Seversk, the front line. That's what's driving all of this, is the military situation. Let's be honest about it. The only reason that Trump is trying to circle back to Alaska is because he is getting a beatdown on the front lines. U.S., NATO, Ukraine, they're losing big on the front lines. And the latest L that they are taking is in Seversk. There are now confirmed reports from Ukraine, sources from Ukraine military mapping channels, that the Russian military is now in the city center of Seversk, and they have cut off the supply lines to Ukraine, and it's only now a matter of time before Russia has captured Seversk. Our assault companies are already in the city center. The logistics of the armed forces of Ukraine to the city are cut off. The cleaning in the city continues. This is from the ex-account of Yeroman. It's the military situation that is driving all of this. If Russia was in a stalemate, believe me, there would be zero offer from the Trump administration. Zero. So, Orban, he is lashing out at Ursula and her letter demanding 135.7 billion euros to Project Ukraine in order to keep the war going for the next 2 years. She claims this will keep Ukraine afloat for 2 years. I think this will keep Ukraine afloat for 6 months. But she sent a letter to all of the EU heads of state, and Ursula is giving them three options. I talked about this in a video update a couple of days ago. She is telling them to either give up their own funds, their own money to Zelensky, to either collectively take out a loan, right, for all of the EU countries to take out a loan and then give it to Zelensky, or to steal the Russian frozen assets. That's the option that she prefers. Did I say steal? I mean seize. I always do that. Seize the Russian assets. That's the option that she prefers. But those are the three options that she has presented to EU heads of state. In my video update from a couple of days ago, I mentioned that there is a fourth option that Ursula fails to mention, which is for leaders of the European Union to not do anything, right? To say, I'm not going to give Ukraine money from my pocket. I'm not going to guarantee a loan to Ukraine. And as far as seizing the Russian assets, you're on your own, Ursula. don't include me on that one. But Orban, he is saying that Hungary is going to opt for option number four. My option, not Ursula's option. Orban is going to take up my offer, which is to not get involved, not do anything, and to try and wind this conflict down. That's basically what Orban is saying in a post on X, actually two posts on X, where Orban said if the European Union, if Hungary or the European Union loaned money to Ukraine, then it would be paid for by Europe's grandchildren. That's how long it would take to actually get the money back. Europeans' grandchildren would pay for new Ukraine loan, according to Orban. And then he posted on X, 135 billion. That's how much money The head of the Brazilian bureaucracy, President von der Leyen, wants to scrape together for Ukraine. This is the price of prolonging the war. The president has one problem. She doesn't have the money. What she does have are three proposals on the table. Option number one, that the member states should chip in willingly and cheerfully from their own budgets, as they had nothing better to do, as if they had nothing better to do. Number two, a well-known Brazilian magic trick, just borrowing. There's no money for the war today, so our grandchildren will pay the bill. Absurd. Or option number three, the proposal to seize the frozen Russian assets, a convenient solution, but its consequences are impossible to foresee. Lengthy legal wrangling, a flood of lawsuits, and the collapse of the euro. This is what awaits us if we choose this path. So let's choose common sense. Let's stop funding a war that cannot be won alongside the corrupt Ukrainian war mafia and focus our strength on establishing peace. It's time to turn back from this Brazilian dead end. I like that word, the Brazilian. The Brazilian dead end, according to Orban. So that's a roundup on all the news from Project Ukraine. I'm sure by the time I post this video, there will be more updates. But that is it for now, until I get to my clown world, that is. But Trump signed the Epstein Act. It passed the Senate. Of course, it passed the Senate very quickly. It made its way to Trump's desk. He signed it. He also posted on Truth Social, a lengthy post on Truth Social. From what I understand, the DOJ now has 30 days to begin releasing unclassified documents connected to Epstein. Trump said it's a Democrat hoax in his Truth Social post, but he also said this latest hoax will backfire on the Democrats, just as all of the rest have. So you were trying to protect the Democrats from this backfiring on them. That's why you stonewalled and did everything in your power to prevent these documents from being released, because you wanted to protect the Democrats. You didn't want this to backfire on them. What is the logic to all of this, U.S. President Trump? Anyway, that is what he posted on Truth Social. Unclassified, and I imagine heavily redacted Epstein files will be released. Trump has signed the act, the Epstein Transparency Act. So let's do some clown worlds and we can wrap up this lengthy video. Trump is also going to be seeing Zoran Mamdani, who Trump has a nickname for. Oh boy. Here's what he posted on Truth Social. Oh boy. He's going to meet with Mamdani tomorrow. Communist mayor of New York City, Zoran Kwame Mamdani, that's in quotes, has asked for a meeting. We have agreed that this meeting will take place at the Oval Office on Friday, November 21st. Further details to follow. I don't get the Zoran Kwame Mamdani. I don't quite understand that. But anyway, that's what Trump posted on Truth Social. I might be missing something here, but he said the communist mayor. Okay. Maybe he's communist. Maybe not. What does it matter? I mean, you have to meet with him. He's the mayor of New York City. Like it or not, you're going to have to meet with him as the president of the United States. Or he's actually asking for the meeting. So he's asking to meet the president of the United States. It is the biggest city in the United States. So meet with him. No reason for name calling. Pre-meeting. Pre-meeting. Why are you name calling? Anyway, that is what he posted on Truth Social. Mertz, since we're talking about bashing cities, Mertz, he said that the city in Brazil where they held the COP, what was it, the COP 30 or something like that, the environmental conference, whatever it's called, in this city in Brazil, I forgot the city's name. One second. Let me see if I have it bookmarked. The city where it was held was Belém, which hosted the UN Climate Summit. Yeah, COP 30 or COP 3 or something like that. Mertz, from what I understand, Mertz was at this summit at least for a day. Anyway, he returned back to Berlin, and he was speaking to journalists. And boy, did he trash Brazil and the city of Belém. He said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we live in one of the most beautiful countries in the world," Mertz said, adding, "Last week I asked some journalists who were with me in Brazil, who among you would like to stay here? Not one hand raised. They were all glad that we had returned to Germany, especially from this place we had just been to." So he didn't bash only Belém, he bashed all of Brazil. Yeah, that's Mertz. The mayor of Rio took issue with what Mertz said. And the Rio de Janeiro mayor's remarks on Mertz were that on X, where is it? That Mertz is the son of the mustache man, tramp, and AZI. The Brazilian official deleted the post soon afterwards, writing in another message that the tirade was his way of letting off steam today. So that's the situation with Mertz and Brazil. So he deleted that post. And do I have any other clown worlds? Let's see. Yes, I do. One final clown world coming from Le Monde, who is reporting that there is a power struggle in the European Union between Ursula and stunning and brave Kaya Kallas. And they're describing this as a Game of Thrones, palace intrigue, power struggle. Le Monde's title is worthy of Game of Thrones, the EU Commission's battle for control of diplomacy. The president of the institution, Ursula von der Leyen, has been consolidating more and more powers to the detriment of the historic diplomatic service led by Estonian Kaja Kallas, who now appears increasingly isolated. So Ursula and Kallas are fighting for control of the EU. Let that sink in. Ursula and Kaja Kallas are in a power struggle to see who's going to control and run the European Union. Ursula and Kaja Kallas, man, we are screwed in Europe. In the EU, we are screwed. We are screwed. By the way, Ursula's gonna win that fight. No doubt about that one. If it's Ursula and Kaja Kallas in a power struggle, Ursula's gonna win that one. But still, Ursula and Kallas. Yeah, this is all about Ursula. The complaints from Kaja Kallas are that Ursula is building. She's creating all of these agencies underneath the commission, which already exist underneath Kallas's office. For example, the censorship, the Ministry of Truth agency that she's looking to build, and the intel agency that she's looking to put together. All of this under the commission. These offices, they exist underneath the diplomatic service in a watered down form, but they're there. They're part of the diplomatic office of the European Union, which falls under Kaja Kallas. And she's basically complaining that Ursula is building new offices in order to take away power from her office. So that's what this is all about. Anyway, we're screwed. Like this video, subscribe to this channel, and the Duran.locals.com. We're also on Substack, Telegram, X, Rumble, Duran Shop. All those links are in the description box down below. Take care.